experiment I would like to do. You guys all know Mr. Jeff Goldblum is here, correct?
Yeah, he's hiding under the table.
All right, and we know Dr. Malcolm has a very particular laugh that he does. Exactly. So I would like to hear the crowd's best Dr. Malcolm.
No.
And go. This is the 25th anniversary of Jurassic Park Town. I am your moderator, Luke Hunting. And just go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Christian Lambert.
My name's Greg Price.
I'm Joe Dorowski.
Julie Andelin.
And I'm Travis Tate.
I want two wet burritos.
Got a fan, cool.
So let's just kick it off with our first question that I have for the panel. What is your first memory in seeing Jurassic Park?
I guess I'll go. So my first memory is the best theater in town in 1993 was the Trolley Corners Theater. I don't know if anybody remembers the Trolley Corners.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I of course slept out, this is before ticketing, so I slept out the night before to get tickets so I could watch the showing. And then my first memory is that the projectionist came down and brought a CD with him. He had a CD, and he came down and he said, "This is the first time ever that you'll hear digital audio in a movie theater." And I, being a techno kind of nerd slash filmmaker, I'm like, what? This is, and so that was, not only was Jurassic Park groundbreaking as a film, but it was technologically groundbreaking because it was the first time, like, I think Spielberg forced all the theaters to upgrade to DTS for Jurassic Park. So that was my first memory, is like, that was not only a great film, but it was pushing the medium forward.
Mine was just like Sam Neill's character in the movie. I mean, up until they show the dinosaurs, it's like, oh, okay, we're going. There's a little action. Oh, it's all a little claw. This is good. Okay, it's going to be a regular dinosaur movie. And then you see the brontosauruses move and all this stuff, and your mind just goes, what the hell am I watching? This is amazing. Because it's still good now. I watched it the other night just for this, and I'm going, this CGI is just as good as the stuff they show now. Because even nowadays, I love Avengers movies, and I love Infinity War. But when Mark Ruffalo's head pops out of that armor at the end, I can see it and go, that is just not him. The CGI is not there. It's so complex, and then you pop out his head. But the dinosaurs were real when they moved, and then they also used the animatronics. So when the Tyrannosaurus Rex, it's just, when you see it, your mind goes crazy because it looks so real. And it had never looked that real before. Before it was just iguanas with like painted things or stop motion plastic. But that was, my mind melted when I saw that. The same thing happened in Terminator 2, just my mind melted.
It's funny when you said,
oh.
It wasn't me.
An emergency has been reported in this building. Please.
Nope.
False alarm.
Yes. Instructions, we're staying.
The raptors are loose, everybody.
We're now talking Jurassic Park.
It's just like the end of every movie. There's an alarm going off,
yeah.
Panic.
When you said that your introduction was like Sam Neill's, I was like, you were picked up on a helicopter.
Yeah, but that's not how you start a movie?
I was 11 when it came out, and I remember like seeing all the commercials and being super excited, and my parents were going to go to it, and I remember breaking out my piggy bank and saying, I can pay for my own ticket, can I go? And they said no, and I begged, and finally they said, fine, you can come. And then I remember during the kitchen scene with the velociraptors being in a fetal position in the chair and like watching it like this, but not being able to look away. Even after we got out, I was almost like, when can we go again? I want to see that again, even though I was that scared during the sequences.
It's not my first memory, but I have to riff off of what you just said. I took my
13-year-old brother to see the movie when I went to see it the second time. And we're crawling through the ductwork, and the girl falls down, the velociraptor jumps up. My brother had been sitting like this, and he pulled his knees up because he was afraid that the velociraptor was going to eat him.
Mine was very vivid, actually. I was in Cedar City, Utah at a football camp, and we were all being very rowdy. We pulled all the mattresses out of the dorms and put them in one room and created like this Royal Rumble arena, and we're throwing each other around. So our coaches needed something to keep us busy, and it was the summer of 93, and they're like, all right, we're going to take them to a movie. And we went, and I had kind of heard about Jurassic Park, heard it was pretty cool. So we all sat there, and it's like 35 teenage football players, and we're all just quiet, just watching what's going on. Nobody made a peep. I mean, there was some jumping, like scary jumping type stuff like that, but everybody just stayed quiet. And it was the first time the entire week that happened. And then we spent the rest of the season walking around like this, like trying to sneak up on each other. It was a great time.
Yeah, mine is very vivid in my head too, because we went and saw it at the drive-in when I was living in San Diego. So they had like the palm trees and stuff were kind of around it. So I remember like, okay, no. So you should have saw Jurassic Park 2.
Yeah, right.
And I remember after the movie, me and my brother, we stopped and got food at McDonald's or something, and we were coming back up after throwing the trash away, and we were like, you know, there's dinosaurs everywhere. We were like very, very jumpy. My dad, being a comedic genius, was waiting around the corner, and we came running up to run back to the house, and he jumped out and he goes, I booked it. My brother stopped and screamed. And I remember him coming back into the house and like, why did you leave? He goes, why did you stop? Dinosaur. Alright, so my next question, what does the Jurassic Park franchise and movie, what does it mean to you?
So like I said before, to me it was like the first time that there was a realistic monster on the screen. I mean, like they were a realistic animated character, and so I think. But it's more than that. There is that technical aspect to it, but for me. Like, I've had kids growing up watching this movie over, binge-watching it. My son was afraid to watch Elmo in Grouchland. But he would watch Jurassic Park, the whole you know, series, over and over. He would binge-watch it. And I couldn't conceive that. And I know of several other kids that are kind of quiet, scared little kids that are easily scared by Elmo or whatever, but they will watch Jurassic Park, and I don't understand how that works, but it's one of those unique things with the love of dinosaurs that you have from being a kid, that you have that connection to the movie because of your love of dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs are not real. Elmo actually exists. Of the two, one of those guys can actually come and kill you, and that's Elmo. They're not wrong. Dinosaurs don't exist. For me, it's just old-fashioned movie fun. I mean, that's what Steven Spielberg, don't forget, that same year, Schindler's List came out. If you want to see two distinctly opposite movies by the same person, 1993 for Steven Spielberg is it. That's a defining moment of who he is. He is a serious, dramatic filmmaker, and he is one of the best blockbuster fun. That's why I wore my Jaws shirt today. My custom Jaws shirt. Because Steven Spielberg, he is an old-time fun director, and this is one of those movies where he kind of got back to being super fun, because it was all Indiana Jones things that anytime he did anything fun. We had kind of had Always, and we had some other, you know, Empire of the Sun. We're like, come on, let's see something great. This was exciting. The movie from start to finish is fun throughout. It's comedy, it's action, it scares you at times. It's like what else can you want from a blockbuster? For, you know, back then it was like $5.25 to go see a movie. now that you have to put down like $35 just for you and your wife to go see something that might not be good.
It's similar for me. It's like the encapsulation or the platonic ideal of movie magic. It just gets everything right about inviting the audience to suspend their disbelief and go on this wild adventure that is going to just put them through every emotion that you want. And you're like, you willingly go in to be scared and to experience all those emotions. And it was a master craftsman with the perfect story when the technology had just caught up to the right moment for it all.
Yeah, I feel it's the Star Wars of that time period, in that it pushed that technological envelope to the point that it's still a movie, as you said earlier, that holds up really well today. And it brought certain, like, velociraptors were not something that were really in the collective consciousness of people at the time. They brought that dinosaur into kind of more common knowledge. Everybody knew about tyrannosauruses and brontosauruses and a couple, you know, triceratops, a couple others, but the velociraptor was not something people thought about much, or was one that was really commonly known. And that was kind of a neat bit. It's also one of the first times that, and I just like read dinosaur books like crazy when I was growing up, but it's one of the first times I can ever recall them talking about birds being descended from dinosaurs was that movie. So it was kind of on the cutting edge of the technology and also bringing some of that dinosaur science to the public that wasn't there before.
But they wouldn't commit to the feathers.
Eventually they kind of did. For me, it kind of rekindled something that hadn't really been there since like Return of the Jedi. When I was six when Return of the Jedi came out. So I watched it on VHS, and there was some Indiana Jones in there, but there wasn't like anything that just blew you out of the water for 10 years until Jurassic Park came out. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember that feeling now. This is really cool. And it was just the beginning, because it's still going now. So the waves that it created was just massive. And then also 3 years later, I had a son, and he's just super into, he's got Asperger's. So he's a dinosaur encyclopedia, and he knows more than I'll ever know about dinosaurs. But it's something that even from his first words, we always had that connection, that touchstone that we still have today with Jurassic Park. So it's been amazing for me.
And I was at the age when it came out that I was already all about dinosaurs. So it was like the perfect thing for me. I was like, oh, the thing that I'm reading all these books on all the time and trying to consume much of that as I can, but oh, it's a movie and it's fantastic. And so that's kind of really what it meant to me. So the next question, how did it impact you after seeing it?
I think I already talked about like raised the whole entire family watching that one of those movies, and like we have like whenever the road's about to get rough and we're driving, I'll say, hang on to your butts, or if something's not fulfilling that we're doing is, so the kids will say, you will have insert the blank on your blank tour, once you basically, so there's a whole bit of vocabulary that our family uses that comes from that movie.
Hey, for me, it's just the movie making, because I'm a big Spielberg fan, so for me, it's one of the movies that I just enjoy seeing. I even went when it came out about 2 years ago, when it came out in 3D, that movie's really good in 3D.
It really is.
I mean, you wouldn't think so, because we've seen so many rip-offs where they try to upcharge us to see a 3D movie and it's useless, right? You're like, where was the 3D? Oh, one time it went fuzzy and it came back. But in this movie, the way he filmed it before, he wasn't thinking about 3D in particular, but he was thinking about dimension. He was thinking about always making sure where perspective was. And when you see it in 3D, you will be shocked that it wasn't originally formatted for that. It is just so well done. So for me, it's just a movie that's so well done and well crafted that I enjoy not only the actual story and the fun of it, but the way it was made.
I saw it in 3D, and when Lexi falls down the tunnel and the raptor comes back, I jumped, and I've seen it a million times, knew it was going to happen, but in 3D, I still jumped.
Yeah, it was fantastic 3D.
It was one of many things that kind of made me want to say, how did they do that, and like really start to think about not just like why the movie was good, but like how, like literally how do they have that T-Rex stomping on that car? and looking in, you know, starting to find articles and information. And I mean, this is, you know, pre-internet where you can just like Google anything about how did they do that and get websites that are going to tell you exactly, you know, behind the scenes movie magic. But I think this is one of the films that kind of pushed me on that path to say, I want to understand all behind the scenes. Like, how is this actually getting onto the film that I'm seeing?
I have kind of 2 points to that. One is similar to yours, where it was the first time I was ever interested in how did they make that effect work? How did they make the dinosaurs? How did they, you know, put all of this together? As I've watched movies my whole life, I was in college at the time Jurassic Park came out, and up to that point I had never cared how they made a movie or how they did a particular effect. But watching those dinosaurs look so real, like, how did they do that? The other one for me was the music. Jurassic Park was actually the first CD I purchased, the soundtrack for that. Everything I had up to then was cassette tape. It was just that time period where I made that switch.
Mine was Wayne's World.
About the same time. But I love that music, and I played that music obsessively, and I still get kind of the little thrill in my brain when I hear that soundtrack. Come on, and it's just very vivid and memorable, which is fairly typical for John Williams.
I just felt like John Hammond somehow imprinted on me, you know, like he would always be there when they were hatched so he could imprint on them. So the movie always just kind of was there. Like, most of you have no idea who I am. I do stand-up comedy. I've got like 3 bits that reference Jurassic Park. One of them is a really good joke, the other just okay. But it's just been a part of me for 25 years, so it made me better.
It impacted me so much that Christian's got his little glass of water right here. Every time, I see a quarter full cup of water, I look at it. And it's all because of a movie that came out in 1990.
The most ripped-off scene, and you see that in everything.
Did you know how they did that? I actually rewatched all the behind the scenes. They tried all these different effects to get them to do that. They ended up using a guitar chord. They found the right resonance that would make it do that.
Okay, so next question.
And they spent $3 million to get any dead healing.
Seeing this movie, did it increase your curiosity about dinosaurs or more the movie making process?
I was in film school and was a big Spielberg fan when it came out. And so it just inspired me, because it was the apex of animatronics and Sam Winston era. It was like the top of his game. And it was the emergence of ILM going, I think we can do this. Oh wait, we can do this. And it was the beginning of that. And so for me, it inspired me more as a filmmaker than my heart was still broken when I found out there was no such thing as a Brontosaurus. That those were all Apatosauruses, and it was a mistake. I grew up with a Y.
It ruined your childhood?
It ruined my childhood. No, but like that was right around that same time they, you know, discovered the Utah Raptor too. So that was, but there is some of that the paleontology is something that I enjoy doing. We go out and fossil hunt. Down in Delta or wherever they have those little trilobite fossils. It's kind of fun to go out there and dig around. But like, yeah, so it's probably on both sides, but more on the filming side. So.
Well, I grew up a nerd, so I already had the dinosaurs down pat.
Brontosauruses, though.
No, I did. I went to a good public school, apparently.
Yeah.
I was aware that the bird thing before I went into it, because I've always liked dinosaurs. I still kind of do. It's not that it's something I study as much, but I keep up to that. I was also in film school at the same time. And for me, it was much more of the technical aspect of it. Not necessarily the CGI, because the CGI at the time is something that was so far out of my ability in my tax bracket. I knew that I couldn't do the CGI that they could do in any student film I wanted. So I knew that was, put that away. But the animatronic part, we might be able to fake it here and there. How do you do the guitar chord? How do you make the smaller notes versus the big, huge action sequences? So just picking up the little tiny things and just seeing the nuances of, just having a sign spin when the arrow is all screwed up, or watching just Wayne Knight be Newman.
You know what? I think we have one here.
Yeah.
Where is he?
There he is.
There he is.
Where is he?
there.
Has anybody spit a loogie at you?
He's got a sign, though.
Dotson. Dotson's over here. Dotson. Nobody cares.
You get to make a sign like that. It's not that one. I'm just saying in general. The sign is stiff and arrow.
I had definitely had the dinosaur phase that a lot of kids go through. So for me, I became more interested in movie making after. Though I do remember vividly that the Velociraptor, which, like you said, wasn't really part of like the dinosaur phase for kids pre-Jurassic Park. That something was like, well, I got to go learn about that one. That and like that particular dinosaur definitely became way cooler than anything I remembered about it before Jurassic Park.
For me, it was the movie making, but I also had a negative connotation came out of this movie for me with movie making, where Hollywood does things that are dramatically incorrect. At the time that it came out, I had been studying Unix sysadmining and computer programming for about a year, and was just like, this is Unix, I know Unix. I'm looking at like, that is not Unix. And so it's like, why don't people, you know, part of the reason I got into the interest in the movie making was the special effects, and part of it's like, why don't these people understand everything that they're putting in a film, and you know, the logistics of putting a film together and not being able to hire an expert on every little detail kind of came out of that for me.
It definitely got me more into dinosaurs, because being a kid of the 80s, it was like, we had like the really cheap dinosaur toys where they were pink or blue or yellow or Transformer dinosaurs. So up to that point, that was what I knew about dinosaurs.
The little capsule ones that you stuck in the water.
Oh yeah, and then they expanded. They lasted for about 2 hours. So yeah, it definitely got me more into them. And then when my son got into it, it was like, he'll ask me questions about dinosaurs and I answer them, and I'm surprised about what I know about dinosaurs.
Now, are these actual facts, or are you just saying things?
No, they're actually things that somehow he drilled into my brain, and they got stuck somehow. I don't know.
All right, so the movie's obviously based on a book. So my next question is, A, have you read the book? And B, how do you feel about the differences between the film and the novel?
I read the book in the 90s, so I don't remember anything about it. The
90s were a hard time.
It was a good time. But no, I don't remember enough about the book, but I did read the comic books, though.
I read the books, but I'm also of the mindset that they're two different things. Mm. That's why I don't get caught up in the Marvel movies too much. I love the Marvel movies, but a lot of times they take pieces from other comic books, and it's like, that's not, wait a minute, no, it makes sense in the movie. Mm-hmm. And if it makes sense in the movie, that's great. And if it makes sense in the book in a different way, or it's completely different, that's the book. So I've learned over time to don't get all caught up in the book and the movie. Like, the Game of Thrones people just go crazy because it's not the book. It's not the book, it's a TV show. That's a totally different.
Should mention that in the Lord of the Rings panel.
Tom Bombadil.
I do remember in the book that the boy was older and the girl was younger, and I think it was cool in the movie that they gave the older sister and empowered the girl to be the kind of the courageous hero. So I do remember that much about the book.
I never read the book, but I do know Crichton was like heavily involved in the process of doing the adaptation, so I think he was on board with most of the changes, so I don't have any issues. And I mean, in general, so I work in academia, and there's this whole field of adaptation studies, and the worst thing you can do in adaptation studies is get hung up on fidelity. Like, if you mention a concern about fidelity to the text when you're transforming it into a different medium, everyone's just kind of like, well, it doesn't even matter, because you're doing something completely different now. You have to tell the story differently, in a different form. And so you do teach. Yeah,
that sounded like a teacher right there.
I'm sure there are differences, but I'm not too concerned about them.
I have read the books. I read watched the movie first, and one of the things that I decided I liked much better in the movie than the book is that they made Hammond a very sympathetic character in the movie, and I actually really liked Hammond. He's back
there's
there.
There's a Hammond back there.
In the movie. And when I read the book, I hated him, and when he died in the book, spoiler if you haven't read the book, I was like cheering. And they actually stuck that ending or that death into The Lost World with a different character, and it's where the compies eat the one guy. But that was how Hammond died in the book. And I'm like, I didn't like the character, so I was glad that he died, but I wish that the Hammond that was in the movie was the Hammond that was in the book.
I bought the book. I like to support the arts to an extent. I didn't read it, my son did, and you're like, your son should be on the panel, not you. But I asked him about it, and there's a lot of deaths in the book that aren't in the movies, and even some vice versa. Some people that died in the movies stay alive in the book, but it's a lot darker.
That they took some things from the original novel and placed them in the other movies, like the hiding behind the waterfall. Mm-hmm. And the boat scene from Jurassic Park 3 where they had the Spinosaurus
with the little
chasing them. It was the T-Rex and the...
And the little girl on the beach, too. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that happens in the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I learned.
So, we kind of touched on it a little bit before, but the music. What are your thoughts on John Williams' score?
Okay, John Williams, he can pretty much do no wrong. I mean, it's right up there with the Indiana Jones, Star Wars, Superman, Jaws, all that stuff. It's just right up. You hear two notes of it and you're like, ah, that's Jurassic Park. You know exactly what it is. It puts you in a mood, makes you want to like walk through the jungle maybe for like 5 minutes till you see a bug. But it like gets you that emotional feeling you want.
I always feel that John Williams' music is a character in a movie. You listen to, and there's a lot of other composers that I really enjoy. I'm really into music. But you listen to like James Horner, Jerry Goldsmith, these kind of people. They make music that supports the cast or supports what's going on, where with John Williams, the music is a character in the film. And what the music is doing is interacting with the actors on stage and the events that are going on in the way that a character would. It's bringing those kind of emotional feelings. It's giving an emotional response in the music in a way that a character would react if they were in the show.
I really remember when I was taking piano lessons, we had one piano recital that was going to be Hollywood. You do something from film, and I was trying to learn Jurassic Park for a very long time, and I think I drove my family nuts trying to master that tune. But it is just, like you said, it's one of the iconic movie tunes where you get a few notes, and it's in your head, and you're stuck, and that's all there is.
Well, I'm horribly biased. I mean, he's the maestro as far as I'm concerned, and he's our Beethoven for us. We didn't live during Beethoven, but for us, if you think about how much work he's done, and how different it is, and how memorable it is, and because he's done the Harry Potter thing, he's done Jaws, he's even did Catch Me If You Can, which is a little different than you. He's done different genres, but people don't realize that. He's just amazing, and he can do no wrong. I always try to get the compilation albums of his, and then just play that. He's always got all the great songs he's had. It's just amazing. I don't think we'll ever see someone like him again because he's just so, A, prolific and so good at the same time. Prolific is kind of easy. It's making it because you can just keep doing it and kind of be repetitive, but I don't feel he's repetitive. I feel he's been said that such so many things we just talked about in our Superman panel. Just hearing the Superman theme, you can hear just one or two notes. They even stole it for the new Jurassic Park theme. It's a little bit more guitar-y, but they stole the original couple notes. He's just amazing.
I don't think there aren't many film scores that you would go to the USANA Amphitheater to see the Utah Symphony perform, and they just did that, right? So, like, obviously, it's such a good film score, and it's so diverse too. It's the dynamic range of the you know, from the beautiful ending sequence with the piano where the helicopter's flying away, you know, and you're looking at the pelicans flying, to the intense stuff when the dudes get eaten. So again, I think it's an amazing film score. Among John Williams' great film scores, it is a standout film score.
I remember being, I was the band kid in school, so I remember, I think it was junior high, we had a big concert and they said we could pick one movie score to play. And I got everyone so riled up about Jurassic Park that it was like, Jurassic Park, Walk. Ninth grade band. I only have a few more questions, so if anyone wants to start lining up here with the microphone, okay, so what do you guys feel about the sequel movies?
As in Jurassic World series, or like as in Lost World and
Jurassic Park 3, and then the two Jurassic World movies. The franchise, I guess, would be.
I think they're just like any other sequels. I mean, there's parts about them that aren't great, but then there's parts of them that are really awesome. I mean, even the Jurassic World movies, I kind of like the callbacks. A lot of people had a problem with the callbacks. I liked it. It hit me somewhere. Live long and prosper. All right. So I'm a fan of them. Like, I hadn't seen Fallen Kingdom last week because I'd been too busy. And I was like, I gotta go see it. I'm gonna be on this panel. So I go, I get my popcorn, I eat the entire thing by myself. And then like two nights ago, my wife goes, okay, we're gonna watch Fallen Kingdom. And I'm like, what? I didn't know that she had bought it and we could stream it early before it came out on Blu-ray. So there's 8,000 calories I didn't need to consume. But I'm a fan, it was worth it.
You'll burn them all off this weekend.
Yeah, I'm
the
right now.
You make for the comp. For a fan X. Yeah.
I've enjoyed every sequel, and some of them I think are better than others, but the first movie was so impactful to me because it was the first of its kind that none of the others will ever hold up. No matter how good the story is or anything else, or how much I enjoy it, it's never going to equal that first moment where they stop the Jeep, he stands up and pulls off his glasses, and you see the Brachiosaurus. It's like, wow. You know, that moment was so impactful to me that everything that came after, as much as I enjoy them and as fun as I think every single one of them are, they'll never hold a candle to the original.
They're better than the Jaws sequels, though, guys. Remember that.
Yeah, this isn't the only franchise that maybe has diminishing returns on some of the sequels. That's not an uncommon issue
right. When
you get a home run on your first part in a series.
Have you guys seen the Michael Keaton movie, Multiplicity?
Yes!
So, as more duplicates are made, he becomes less and less. It's like a photocopy, and it gets less and less.
It becomes fuzzy.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you make a copy of a copy, it's not as sharp as you.
Exactly, a copy of a copy of a copy. And some of these movies are sharp copies, and some of these are not-so-sharp copies. But, again, they're just pale reflections of that first one. Because even the second movie, which was by Spielberg, is not quite the same. It's hard to capture that first feel. It's really hard. So I go into a sequel going, we'll see. Low expectations, and you know, sometimes they exceed them and sometimes they don't. But I try not to get too upset about sequels being good or bad. It's, if you like it and you want to see it again, it's the third movie. If you screw up the second one, I'm not going back to the third. Yeah. But I'll give you a benefit of the doubt in a second.
I think you've said everything. Like it is. They're not the original, and it doesn't have that impact. There is not that aha moment of when you first see the dinosaurs in the other movies because you've already seen it. But they're fun to watch. I mean, come on, they're popcorn movies, and they're better than a bad Jurassic Park sequel is better than most movies, original movies. So I'll take it.
Yeah, you have a question?
All right.
When I was a kid, the five movies I'd watch over and over again are the two Jurassic Parks and the first three Star Wars films. Kind of shows you how much of a nerd I am. So I'm actually curious about, kind of on the subject of the Jurassic World series, I'm just curious, if you could get inside that writing room and try to direct where the story is going, what exactly would you do with that power?
Boo, 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 boo. So like they've been teasing this military application of the dinosaur DNA in both those movies, and I've been like, well, that's what I want to see. I want to see raptors on the battlefield. I want to see, like, some actual
raptors.
Seriously. I mean, am I wrong? I mean, like... I think it was a really interesting thing for Colin Trevorrow to come up with in the first one, and they teased it like that's what they're going to do in the second one. And the second one had an exploding island, so I don't know when they're going to eventually get to that, but that's what I want to see.
More B.D. Wong.
Yeah.
Yes. I don't care what he's doing. It is more B.D. Wong.
Evil B.D. Wong.
Happy B.D. Wong. Sad B.D. Wong. I like to see him on stand up, even if he's in the Gotham. I like to see him just show up.
Somebody make him B.D. Wong emojis for his phone, please.
I like to see that. So the thread that they haven't ever picked up again in any of the movies is who was the guy that Nedry was working for? And did they ever get some dinosaur embryos, and what are they going to do with them? I'd like to know who that organization was or that group was and what they were going to do. I'd love to see that explored in the movie.
I agree with that.
There's that Barbasol can.
Yep.
Yeah. It's still there. Get Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible.
They did a game on that, actually.
I feel like they did a better job in the newest one, but I want more dinosaurs. Like, we've got the raptors, we've got the T-Rex, we got that. But and they did show a little bit, like, when the island was exploding. I was like, well, yeah, but those are the ones I wanted to see. Now they're all fire. Awesome.
I don't have a plot idea, but I think one thing that the first one did really well that maybe the others haven't done as well is that first one is paced masterfully. Like, it gives you the exact right amount of suspense to awe when you actually see the dinosaurs, to terror when they're attacking, and that balance is done so well in that first one, and I feel like a lot of the sequels is just like, we just want to do more bigger dinosaurs, and it kind of gets exhausting by the end, and some of the magic I think gets taken away because there's none of that suspense and build up. So I'd say let's look at the pacing and how they space out the action beats in that first one and try and mirror that a little bit more instead of just saying let's do dinosaurs and a volcano, and that'll be exciting.
I don't know that I want to see this, but I'm kind of nervous that they might do like some sort of human dinosaur hybrid now that there's a clone. Maybe it would be cool. I don't know.
Dino-Man.
It could. I want to be Dino Man. I don't want to see Dino Man.
Thank you for your question.
Thank you for taking my question. So here's a good question. I think might get you thinking. And that is. Jurassic Park, the original one, was a very quotable movie. There's a lot of great quotes that kind of entered into popular language. What are some of your favorite quotes from the movie? Or from the movie, the first one?
The Goldblum one.
Well, let's hear it.
You guys do so wonderfully. You put me to shame.
The must go faster is a really easy one to pull out.
I just want Newman popping up going,
I'm calling Newman as well.
That's Newman. It's somebody he's the exact same. If Newman had a real job in the jungle, that's what he'd be doing. Kramer comes flying in. What's with all the boats? Why does all this spin?
Kramer has the no office words.
Talking about the quote by Goldblum where he says you focus so much on trying to find out if you can do it, you forgot to stop to
think about
what
you should.
See if you should. Yeah, that's a great quote. That's like my favorite one.
It's a very easy memeable one. Whenever you hear like scientists about to do something, people just drop that quote.
I think there's a couple lines. Life finds a way. That's one and then there's a. So I've been having some sweet all day. I'm going to get some salty. So I'm going to have some sweet and I need some salty now. So that's what I'm going to do.
Thank you.
My personal favorite is actually in the second movie, and that's, oh sure, ooh, ah, that's how it always starts.
Yeah,
later there's running and screaming.
Probably hold on to your butts.
I have a coworker that uses that all the time, and I say, you need to stop saying that, because that's how you get eaten by dinosaurs.
That's true.
Then there's Hammond's quote, spare no expense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Well, now that you've answered what your favorite quote is, what's your favorite scene? Mine personally is when the T-Rex first comes out in the rain and she does that big roar. So what's your guys's?
I honestly do like the Newman Dilophosaurus scene when he gets in the car and then the frills shoot out. That got me when I was a kid. So that's my favorite scene.
I'm gonna say the opening shot, the establishing shot where you see all of the valley and you see the dinosaurs in the water, and then that it still is a great shot. And for the memory of when I first saw that, that's all I'll say, that's my favorite shot.
It's not my favorite, but I like it a lot because anytime someone threatens kids with talons. but when Grant's talking about, you know, trying to give that kid a lesson and to respect them, it's really great to show his arc to where he starts off from with kids and where he ends up with the kids at the end holding them. And so I like that as establishing character scene, but it's also fun because the kid was a snot-nosed punk.
Baby smell.
It's not like old peanut butter.
Just from like the filmmaking, the whole scene in the kitchen with the velociraptors, like just the way they're able to build suspense in that scene. And then I was reading about it, and they said it was actually a nightmare to shoot because that kitchen is full of reflective surfaces. So like the cast, like all the crew were just wearing black and trying to sit in shadows.
Well, and the callback in the newer one to that scene was my favorite in the newer one.
I wonder if the reflection off of the steel was in the script, or if it was like, we might as well just use this in the movie.
Don't know. I love the Triceratops scene where he brings on top of it and just is like that kind of captured the whole, you know, little kid joy of dinosaurs are real. You know, that moment kind of just captured that. You have this older adult that's being a little kid.
And he was sniffing the eggs. When he found the hatched eggs, he was like, because it's got to smell gross, but it's also something that he would know he would never have done in his whole life, because it's such a rare opportunity. And so to see that wonder of his, that was, I love that scene too.
It's like in an 80s movie when a detective puts a knife into the cocaine and goes, yep, cocaine. Like, how would you even know that? What are you doing?
I'll explain that afterwards.
Okay.
And another one for me personally too is that very last shot of the T-Rex with the banner falling down.
Yeah.
Like that's like every time I see it.
That's the money shot. That's awesome.
Mine would also be the raptor scene where they're getting chased to the kitchen. I've got a joke where it's about having long toenails, like your toenails are too long. And I'm like, trust me ladies, you've never lived till you've tapped your toenail on the floor like a velociraptor in Jurassic Park. So it's always stuck with me.
Thank you.
Marty.
My question is, currently in technology, we could have the ability to bring back dinosaurs. My question is, if you all had control over that, one, would you do it? And two, if you had the choice to do it, what dinosaur would you?
Well, obviously the Velociraptor, right?
Yes.
I would only bring back Blue.
Start blending. That's a really smart thing to do. Start blending that DNA.
I would play it smart and maybe not make one that eats meat.
Yes.
Only the herbivores.
What would happen if it was just Triceratops? You'd be like, oh no, here's some more grass.
Stegosaurus. We could use them for agriculture, just, you know, have pull plows and stuff like that, demolishing houses. Yeah, just whatever. But again, that's an herbivore. It's not going to eat us. It might accidentally swing at us, but it's, you know, if we raise it and we can teach to be nice and pet it,
it's like a spike heel.
It's like a pug, but it's just got a really vicious tail.
I'd probably recommend also starting smaller. Not just herbivore, but small herbivore.
Just start with T-Rex. Let's work our way down. Right? Who doesn't want to ride a T-Rex?
Yeah,
right?
I'd rather ride something that doesn't eat me.
Well, that's where you're riding it. You're on the back. You don't ride in its mouth.
Thank you.
So I think that one kind of goes along with my question. So if you were to bring back the dinosaurs, would those be your favorite dinosaurs, or would those be the ones that you wanted to bring back?
So, like, our favorite
dinosaur? What is your favorite dinosaur?
Oh, okay.
Ankylosaurus is mine.
Ooh, she's gone hardcore.
It's a deep cut.
It'd be a Cerapod for me, so I'm probably a Apatosaurus. I just love big fat things.
I'm a T-Rex guy.
Yeah, I was gonna say T-Rex. The little like 5-year-old me could never let go of the T-Rex. That's the coolest dinosaur.
And I don't care. I just wanted to have whatever you want to bring back. I just want to see it. Like, I bring back a mammoth for one if you want. I just want to see it work.
So is Spinosaurus.
Whatever, anything. So just like here's a dinosaur of any type. I can flip my crap. I just oh my god. So I'm being very excited. So no matter what, I don't want to be picky at 3D. Let's just get dinosaurs first. Then we can design them the way we want.
I think mine would be an Allosaurus. So I think it's smaller T-Rex.
So it can chase you inside the house versus outside.
With my enemies.
Yeah.
Can I share a really quick T-Rex fact about the movies? You guys might know this. I was blown away. So I do stand up, all right? You know who Harland Williams is?
Yeah.
He was in Dumb and Dumber. He was the cop. He was in Rocket Man. So he was here last year, and I opened for him. And he was talking to me about Jurassic Park. His brother designed the T-Rex. He worked at ILM. Spielberg was there. They were kind of trying to figure out the motion capture thing. And he walks by Steve Williams, who that's his name, his office, and sees that he had built this T-Rex on his computer. And he's like, what is that? And that's how they ended up using what they used. Because he worked on The Abyss. He worked on Terminator 2. And I thought, Harlan's messing with me. So I looked it up. It's true. His brother actually designed the T-Rex that was used in the movies.
And this, just another real quick thing. They actually discovered something scientifically when they were modeling the T-Rex for that movie, because they said it could go 35 miles an hour or something like that. And they actually made it move, like in the animation, going 35 miles an hour, and it didn't look right. They're like, there's no way that the joints would be able to move. So scientists kind of went back and looked. They're like, you're right. It couldn't go that fast. So the movie gave us the small scientific, not discovery, but adjustment.
And then I do have a comment on the first guy's question. So did you guys watch the after credits for Fallen Kingdom, if you've seen it? Okay.
Yes.
So you know where it's going.
Las Vegas.
I know where they want it to go, or they're telling us it might go, but don't forget, sometimes end credit sequences get lost in the next script. So they go, oh, this will be teased. Nobody really stuck around to watch that. We're going to do something different.
Yeah. So do you think that they would do that? Because it would kind of follow the second one. I mean, I like the fact that they're bringing in, like, stuff from the original Jurassic Parks, like, spoiler, guys, if you didn't know this, the Brachiosaurus that was on the island that died was the original one.
Aww. I heard that too, yeah. It makes it more sad, doesn't it?
Thanks, Debbie Downer, for bringing this one down. you want to kick a puppy before you go? Sad story.
I don't know that they'll actually go that route, though, just because the first two Jurassic World movies have fairly closely mirrored the first two Jurassic Park movies, and the third Jurassic Park movie has nothing to do with the mainland at all, and I suspect that the third Jurassic World movie is going to mirror the third Jurassic Park movie. I don't know for sure.
We're gonna go to space.
About it. But I suspect they'll bring it back to the island in some fashion.
All right, guys. Unfortunately, we are out of time.
One more. The 2 minutes. Yeah, he's got a quick question.
Quick question.
Well, really quick. I'm going to say, first of all, Fathom Events is screening Jurassic Park. It's going to be the 16th, 18th, and 19th in theaters. That's the way you have to see it in theaters. Okay. But after this third one is ending, this trilogy that we're in, what do you guys think about if there's that inevitable remake? The hard R, in other words, you don't have the show business. Would you guys oppose that?
I think that since it stands up so well, it doesn't need it.
Nope. Yeah, it doesn't need a remake.
But if they ever do that, put feathers on them.
If they announce that they are doing it, how would you respond to that?
I'd wait until it came out.
Yeah.
I'm tired of all this, oh, it sucks, you ruined my childhood, because I don't know, you haven't seen it yet. Your childhood is what it is. So, they can't retroactively ruin it.
Let's go down real quick and tell everyone where they can find you.
I run a little company called Sideswipe Comics. It's social media comics, so sideswipecomics.com, or follow me on Instagram at sideswipecomics.
I co-host a movie podcast called Matinee Heroes, where each week we talk about heroic cinema and what you can take away for your life. So you can find us at matineeheroes.com, at matineeheroes. I got shirts, we got all kinds of stuff. Matinee Heroes.
I co-host a podcast called The Protagonist Podcast, where each week we talk about a great character and a great story, so you can just search The Protagonist Podcast.
I sing in a nerd quartet, and we're called Rebel Bass, B-A-S-S, and you can find us on Facebook as Rebel Bass Quartet.
I'm stand-up comedian Travis Tate. You can find me on all the social medias. I have a podcast called Late to the Party with Travis Tate, where it's basically, it's basically like a fan X panel, so give it a listen. If you didn't get your question asked, come stand over here and we'll answer it.
And Luke Hunsagarian, you can find me on the Nerd Dome podcast, as well as the Push My Button Gaming podcast. Thank you guys for sitting in the...
Yes.